From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 312 with guest Ed Horley. Recorded Tuesday, March 26th, 2013. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today, Ed Horley, back again. He's a principal solutions architect at Groupware Technology in the San Francisco Bay Area. Currently a Microsoft MVP, got it back in 2004, which is, I think, when I got mine, too. And has spent the last 15 or so years working in networking as an IT professional. He's actively involved in the Pacific IT Professional Users Group, which is at PACITPros.org, which is the largest IT pro user group in Northern California. And you've got an event coming up too, sir, don't you?
I do. We've been hosting, this is actually our second time around, but the big IT pro conference in San Francisco. And I'm actually excited because you're going to be coming down.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I've been retooling my life after the Strange Loop got sold, and I'm not going to do web scaling talks anymore, so I've been certainly focused on DevOps. So when an opportunity to talk to an ops audience around this came up, I couldn't turn that away. And then you've roped me into doing a Run As Radio panel on women in technology, which I say roped because it was clearly your idea, but I'm happy to do it. I have daughters, and certainly the situation around women in the STEM in general has been important to me. So I appreciate the opportunity. And that's May 2nd and 3rd, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, May 2nd and 3rd in San Francisco. I'm pretty excited about it. The women in tech portion, I'm excited about because we're lucky enough to have quite a few women that actually participate with our group. So that part's pretty exciting. And then we happen to know some great MVPs and Microsoft employees that are women that are going to be happy to help out and participate. So I think it's going to be a good amount of fun and hopefully enlightening for some of the gentlemen in the room.
Yeah, and if you're in the San Francisco area, PACITPros.org is where you can sign up. I hope you'll come out, and I'm really looking forward to being there myself. But that is not today's subject, sir. We've talked to you about IPv6 before, but you do other work as well. You're not just spreading IPv6 in the world. What's your regular job?
Well, yeah, I mean, my regular job is actually principally around data center and networking.
Right.
And then with all the new rapid changes that are happening in both networking and with virtualization on the system side, now very much approaching into the networking side, things are getting very, very, very interesting in the data center.
Yeah, I've been keeping a close eye on a few different weird technologies in space. I think software-defined networks is something I want to bring to the show. I've been watching it really closely. Like that, these all seem to be these cloud-oriented technologies that take virtualization to a whole other level.
Yeah, it's running virtual networks on top of your virtual compute environment.
Yeah.
So it's the next layer of abstraction. You know, we're getting into some very interesting, very exciting startups that are happening here in the Bay Area where I'm located in terms of sort of software-defined networking, OpenFlow, and then with all the cloud platforms that are going on. So obviously there's Microsoft with their Azure platform and Amazon with theirs with AWS, but there's a lot of interesting things about trying to come up with a more unified underlying cloud infrastructure standard. So with OpenStack and with CloudStack, there's some interesting additional things that are happening on the side that are really driving a lot of innovation in a lot of new companies that have started here in the Bay, which is pretty cool. And I think there are some challenges that are going to go on for everyone in terms of, you know, it's fast out the market and what do you actually sort of hang your hat on in terms of who's going to win the race. But the reality is for customers, this is a pretty exciting time because there's just a lot of innovation happening.
So for those who haven't actually looked at OpenStack or CloudStack, what are they really?
Well, I mean, this gets down to the, you know, to a certain degree, it's a bit of a religious war.
Mm-hmm.
To a certain degree, it's really about cloud management and frameworks. I think the thing that most people miss is they seem to think that that OpenStack is somehow a virtualization play, and it's not at all. OpenStack is really about having a uniform way of scripting and automating to get a cloud deployment done. And it doesn't matter whether you're building your own private cloud or whether you're utilizing someone's public cloud. It's really all about having the tool sets to be able to rapidly deploy and provision, a virtual environment with either virtual networking, virtual compute, virtual storage, depends on what you want to slice and dice and use. And you have a common set of software and tooling and APIs to be able to do all that work. And I think that's really where the story gets interesting, is because of the realization that a lot of the work that operations folks have done in the past traditionally can be automated.
Right.
And that's a huge change of definition for that. The development folks have been doing this for ages. And the older school Unix folks have been doing this for even longer, right? Because most of the older Unix folks were developers too. And so they're like, why don't we automate that? I want to be as lazy as possible. That's the phrase that goes around, right?
But you get back to those old Unix guys. There was no concept of a separation between development and operations. They were the same people.
Yes. And so you're seeing that sort of tradition come back. I don't think it necessarily ever went away. I think the guys just hid and were as lazy as possible, right? Do your startup and get the tooling done and go off and hang out at the beach and make lots of money. Or more appropriately, in your Birkenstocks and your sandals, kicking it out in Santa Cruz, right, or whatever. But I think there are a lot of folks that are now realizing that they apply all those same models to, Microsoft platforms and doing a better job of doing that. I think the work that Jeffrey Snow has done with PowerShell just completely changes everything that happens in the Windows world.
It's not just about scripting. It's the fact that the GUI on top of IIS is actually just generating PowerShell scripts underneath, so that everything is automatable. There's no button you can click on in a UI that doesn't become a command you could have run as a script.
Yeah, and that's a huge paradigm shift for those that were traditionally. I think the GUI is still very, very useful for folks, especially folks who are getting into utilizing DOS for the first time around to really sort of figure out, what's this function, what does it do? But the reality is, for those that are deploying, ongoing operational environments for enterprises or even for small businesses, being able to automate that stuff makes your life so much easier. And just the fact that uniformly across the board, Microsoft has the adoption that PowerShell is the way going forward to make all this happen.
Right.
It's just a huge, huge change. And I think it's a really important one. There are a handful of things that I think IT pros and folks who are fit in the DevOps category just have to know, PowerShell being one of them. Hyper-V being another. So just understanding the virtualization layer, how important it is that everything is running in that area. And certainly for deployment, that's really important. And then understanding tooling on the system center side. And then if you want to make a lot of money, is learning Orchestrator. Orchestrator is a tool, when it comes out of the gate, has nothing in it, right? It's the one product you install from Microsoft that does nothing the moment you touch it.
Well, like Word, it's a big blank page.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's going to execute and do stuff that you have the innovation and time to sit down and come up with. And that is, I think, the people that sit down and build a library of useful things to do with Orchestrator. And it doesn't matter what you want to touch. I don't care if you want to run networking gear. I don't care if you want to run Unix systems. I don't care if you want to run, Windows platform and PowerShell. You can use Orchestrator to drive all of it.
And this really gets back to this idea of taking these concepts that exist in the public cloud and starting to architect our own infrastructure the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the great lessons that is being passed downstream, is the advantage of the technology innovation that's happening on the service provider side now moving to the enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting to me, or what I've seen so far, is that the innovations at either end, I've seen very large companies, some of the companies that I get to work with, I'm privileged enough to work with, that OpenStack initiative, right? They are innovating. I mean, I can't go in and help these companies any more than what they're doing, because they're writing the code for OpenStack.
Wow.
So you can't, it's not someone in my position. I'm like, what can I do to enable you to take workload off so that you're working even faster and harder on the stuff that you're already doing, because it's so innovative and interesting. And then you get the other extreme, which is these tiny little shops. 20-man shops, right, that are doing just incredible stuff that is as innovative as the stuff that are these very large shops that have, hundreds of DevOps folks who are working on contributing code to make something really interesting happen. And you see these tiny little shops that are doing the same thing. And stuck in the middle is this big group of between small business to enterprise that have no clue or very little clue about what's actually happening on either end.
Right.
They're seeing all the innovation, but none of them understand how to adopt it. Very few of them understand what's really happening with it. And I would argue that most CIOs today that are in the market are starting to see these conversations happen, SDN, OpenStack, OpenFlow, all these conversations, but not a single one of them have an architect in their position that can explain to them end-to-end, how do I do a deployment for these technologies?
Sure.
It's smaller shops that have very elite DevOps folks who understand how to make this stuff happen, and then the very large companies are saying, you know what, I don't want to be tied to a singular framework anymore. I want the option to be able to elastically move my workloads around. I want to be able to build the same sort of infrastructure that Microsoft or Amazon is providing to the general public at large, but I need to provide that to my own internal resources.
Yeah.
That's where I see the market today. I see things starting to tip where these services are turning into commodities that are now being positioned to enterprises. So there's some really interesting companies that are turning around and taking and developing.
And at no point are they talking about eliminating IT people in this process. It's just getting rid of this rote work by automation.
Yeah, I mean, every single IT pro should be excited because your day is not consisting of ugly help desk tickets and the same task over and over again.
Yeah.
And if you're anyone who's engaged and interested and wants to do more interesting projects that are more cerebral, that take more engineering time, that have more value add, that's where things are moving. So Don Jones actually gives a really good, he gave a great presentation at the Tech Mentor Conference about talking about how IT pros jobs are going to change, that you're really going to, you really need to migrate to a DevOps mindset.
Mm-hmm.
In order to make sure that your career is going to advance, that you're really going to have something in the future to work on. And your job is to eliminate other people's IT pro jobs. It's literally what it comes down to. It's like, if you can replace that with a script, do it.
Yeah.
It's not that you're ensuring someone's job. It's ensuring that you're adding scalability so that you can free up that resource to do something more interesting. Now, whether all the companies see that or not, and whether they get that is a different issue.
And you can also argue, like, why would you want to stay at a place that just wants you to be able to add users to Active Directory?
Yeah, I mean, you got to wonder, where are you adding value in that chain, right?
Sure.
Especially when you're replaced by a pretty well-written PowerShell.
Yeah.
And that's the comparison for folks today, is if you're not doing the work to allow a company to get out of that mindset, that IT is an inhibitor in the business process, right? That's pretty much where people see IT functions today.
But it's certainly in that middle block. You know, I think the big enterprises are now plugged in, and the young startups are now plugged in this idea of IT as this accelerator and as of this huge value add. This is the distinction in my business, is how we're utilizing technology. But in the middle, we're an expense. We're a budget item.
Yeah. We're a budget item. And when it turns into utility compute, so when we're talking about the sort of cloud infrastructure, when we're able to provision and do utility compute, it gets IT out of the discussion of, well, what exactly are you doing? It's like, no. Here's the utility compute. As long as your business process manager says it's okay for you to click the button to build X amount of virtual machines and whatever else you need or require to get your application done and built, click the button. I don't care anymore, right?
I'm out
of the business of caring what your business process is on that case. You click the button, your compute environment's deployed, your application suite's deployed, go do whatever you want to do on top of it until your business manager says you're not willing to pay for that anymore.
And I have found consistently organizations that have sat down and planned out a route to the cloud, whether they went to the cloud or not, it's the insights around what they're actually using internally. What are the apps that matter? What is the hardware that matters? You know, what if you're trying to cost out what it's going to take to run in the cloud, you can get a real insight into what's important inside of your organization. And sometimes keeping it internal, it becomes cost effective and reliable. But I think it starts with just a good instrumentation pack. Do I know where I'm at?
Right. And I think it's sort of striking how many enterprises really don't understand how that sort of end cycle works for IT.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the blame fully falls on the IT folks not explaining it.
Well, not surfacing it in a constructive way. I love creating instrumentation that gives people insight, even excitement, about what we're actually doing inside of IT. How rapidly data is growing. or customer bases are growing, or interactions are growing, like actually surfing this thing, those in a way so that people can get excited about what's happening on the back end.
Yeah, that's definitely what Hadoop is addressing, right? Hadoop
sure.
In the market space is one of the things on that big data side, and what's happened in the industry. What's happened, I think, is that, you know, it costs you more to get rid of the data than it does to actually just leave it around and analyze it out. Right? There's a certain truth to it, right?
And yeah,
that,
sure.
That it costs you more to get rid of the data than it does to just say, you know what, we have it, we might as well look at it.
Yeah.
And our cost points have driven to the point where it makes sense to actually start analyzing the data that we're getting on an ongoing basis. And they now have a compute model that can do it.
Well, and it do strikes me that Hadoop is so cloud friendly that it's naturally a scale out, you know, utility compute problem. You want to go faster? We just throw more at it.
Right. Yeah. And it fits one for one. It's that IT enabler that everyone turns around and says, well, why didn't you build this for me like 10 years ago? This is like totally cool. I mean, so those sort of use cases, I think, are going to drive that cloud adoption. And then it becomes a business choice of, do I run that in my own infrastructure or do I run that out in someone else's utility compute environment?
Sure.
And it's the flexibility of a business decision. And it's taken it off the IT team's, you know, responsibility to say, you know, where it has to run and how it has to run. You know, it's not the square box anymore with the round peg. It's, guess what? Business decision maker, you go decide which business model and what you're willing to pay for, and we can make that happen.
Well, and now it strikes me that stuff like OpenStack is saying, and you never actually have to make that choice. Change your mind next week and shift it over to cloud. Want to retool the internal environment? Great. We'll push it up and then we'll retool the environment and we'll pull it back. It doesn't matter.
Right. And that's definitely where that utility portion of mindset comes into play, of understanding how the modern data center is going to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we have a utility compute environment that we host, and it allows our app devs to get the base model of our application suite done, but then we need to use the heavy lifting to get the data crunch, so we move that up to the cloud because they have far more resources for us to use, and then we pull the data set back down, get the analytic reports done on site, because we don't want to pay for the cycles for what it takes when we only need quarterly reports or
sure.
something of that nature.
Yeah, why would you leave it standing?
Yeah, and so you can take and move it around as you see fit. I think it's going to be interesting, you know, with PECED coming up, with them talking about, you know, what's going to happen on the whole modern data center architecture, because they're going to have a whole track that's just about sort of architecture for modern data center.
Sure.
So they're modern applications, so you're talking about how to scale up and scale down your application suite, how to deal with big data, how to deal with BYOD, which is a whole other, you know, sort of data center model of
yep.
saying, hey, you know, we don't care anymore. It doesn't have to be a corporate-owned resource. We can virtualize on top of your device if we need to, with mobile device management, things of that nature. But those architectures and Microsoft having a good story around those, I think is going to help people sort of figure it out. Because I think the story that Microsoft has had around Azure has been lost to a certain degree in the noise of just cloud service offerings.
Right.
I think people don't really understand what Azure as a platform, overall arching umbrella, right, really provides customers overall. And there's a mixing and matching of Office 365 and Azure, and people don't understand the difference between what's doing what.
Well, I think there is a wrestling match here, too, because when you talk about utility computing, then everything should look the same and it's not a big deal. And that tends to, today, when you compare AWS and Azure, it's all about the VMs. But
right.
I think Azure's significant offering here is that platform piece, is how I deploy a website and scale that website, decompose those parts without actually owning the OS that underlies it.
Yeah, and the other really, really interesting mindset is that as people start moving to these platforms, Azure in particular, for the app folks that are actually developing stuff, to really understand what a stateless environment is,
yep.
right? That change in mindset, because I've been an IT pro person and a networking person, and trying to get teams, especially on the web development tier side, to really understand, no, you will make my life so much easier if nothing is on the web server.
Right.
It's a stateless device that, you know, you're keeping everything in the app tier and database tier.
Yeah.
Do me the favor. That way I don't have to build a lot of sophisticated rules within my load balancing platforms. With my, you know, if I want to do global global site delivery, content caching. None of those things have dependencies on this particular web app server. And, you know, having Azure actually sort of push that model for me makes my life so much easier, because web dev folks sometimes sit down and say, yeah, well, why don't we make this stateless the same way that we do in Azure? And it just makes sense, because then our app can move to Azure.
Sure.
Like, well, thank goodness, you know, for those of us in the operations side, it's suddenly like, oh, finally, we decoupled and we don't have that dependency. And then getting back to this sort of the old school of messaging buses and understanding how message bus subscription services work and how cloud can leverage that to be able to do deployment models, which is really interesting.
And when you start comparing public and private cloud here, I would think that the one thing you probably want to leave on the public cloud side is a highly elastic website. Because that's
Absolutely.
Where I don't want to own that infrastructure and have to keep spinning up new hardware. When the bomb hits, I want to use that public utility. So it's already got it all there. Just bill me for what I use. And when it spins down, it spins down. That seems to be the one piece that over and over again, if it's going to be highly elastic, leave it in public cloud.
Leave it in public cloud. And then what's more interesting is that as these public cloud services all have CDNs available to them.
Right.
Because they're already elastic. You already know you're distributed and highly globally available. And so the speed and performance for a local end user touching that cloud component becomes very, very quick.
Sure.
And that's for mobile devices. This becomes very important, right? How lightweight and what sort of integration you can have for mobile devices. Well, you don't necessarily want a super heavy service on the web tier side for a mobile device. And to be honest, I think people are getting further and further away from the mobile device needs a separate experience from a full web interface.
Yeah, that's finally starting to end. We would talk about that for a while, but responsive web design makes that really true.
Right. And how responsive you can make that, how stateless you can make that becomes really interesting. And I think the big challenge going forward is, and the companies that are going to do really, really well in the cloud space are going to be ones that figure out, you know what, I don't care if you want to do integration for Azure, Amazon Web Services, or Rackspace on an OpenStack model, or DreamHost on an OpenStack model, or any other service provider on OpenStack models, or a CloudStack model. We have written library and API integrations to allow you to move quickly from one to the other. And that solution offering will democratize utility cloud compute.
Sure.
And allow very interesting uses. To happen. And there are some companies that have gotten really, really close to that. Not perfect yet, but the companies that do this, I think, are going to win in the long run. And this is where I think a challenge for Microsoft is going to be, is to say, you know what? We need to build some tooling that allows you to have those capabilities, right? It's not just about Azure.
Yeah.
Not just about Microsoft Cloud deployment. But you know what? We recognize that OpenStack is going to be a significant market share push. And we should have tight integration for us to be able to push over to a platform like that. We may not give you all one-for-one functionality, and we'll tell you what you get. It's lowest common denominator, right? It's utility, so you know, lowest common denominator on that side. But if they get around to the point where they're really delivering that on their platform, I think hands down, people will be saying, you know what, that makes a lot more sense than, you know, a closed model environment that maybe VMware is doing or someone else.
Yeah. Now it becomes very clear then, that kind of flexibility. Maybe we need to take a couple steps back for folks that are living in the SMB world, and I think that's an awful lot of my listeners too, that mm-hmm. are thinking they, right now that public cloud is just too big of a leap. What do you see are sort of the first steps to making your private cloud possible with existing infrastructure?
With existing infrastructure, you know, Microsoft has got some really good private cloud deployment guides that they've been working on. And actually, the DPE IT Pro teams in North America, so the developer platform evangelists have IT Pro teams that exist in the West, the Midwest, and the East Coast. And those teams have actually been working on a lot of smaller SMB and midline business support cases for private cloud deployment. And it talks about taking your existing server infrastructure, your existing storage, your existing network, and building, you know, Hyper-V deployments with VMM, with system center components, and getting all that integrated and done and built and deployed so that you can leverage the same capabilities of what you sort of see in Azure. Maybe not the same interface. The same interface doesn't exist today. You're still going to be using system center to manage it.
Right.
but really giving the same sort of capabilities and functionality that something like Azure Infrastructure as a Service offering sort of gives you. And then they're working on sort of delivering to that group in sort of what I would say baby steps of how to build more platform and application service delivery. So building a service catalog for an application and saying, you know what, you don't need to worry about the OS, you don't need to worry about the network or the storage definition. All you want is a web tier service.
Right.
Click the button just to get the web tier. And don't worry about that, and we'll show you how to, you know, deploy your application suite onto that web tier without necessarily having to dive into a virtual machine and get in there and do all that work.
Yeah, that's, I think that's a very interesting part about this, is that on the surface level, you sort of look at, well, this is about virtual machine management, image-based management, automated deployment. And as soon as you go down that path, if it's a common app style, if it's web, you don't want to own that. I just want to be able to pick up my web app and drop it where it needs to run.
Exactly. I don't know why the marketing team would ever care what virtual machine they're running on.
No, I'm totally with you.
Or provision any of that. It's like, why do you want to bother?
It gets even harder argument when you start talking about large websites where you're looking at the costs of CDNs to make it globally fast. You're like, boy, right, why would I do this anymore? And all that expense and complexity when I can push it into a cloud and it's literally a set of switches for worldwide distribution.
Right. And the other interesting thing is that as these folks do the private cloud deployment and start seeing some of the flexibility that's involved with it and start getting better. I mean, this is where the push for the IG Pro to the DevOps role changes, mm-hmm, saying, I start now understanding how to automate these deployments. I now start understanding how to build better models for delivery for my business units. You know what? I now understand the value of Azure.
Right.
And I can take that web tier, push it up to Azure, and I can still keep maybe a portion of the app tier or the database tier still down local with me, right? And have the app tier being serviced out of Azure, and have my data center with a private cloud component with integration service those other parts. And that's the long-term model of saying, maybe you have a restriction that says data can't leave prem in the US, right? I have compliance requirements that says this sort of data can't leave my private, my private stack. I can present information, metadata about it, but I can't have the data itself leaving. And this gives you that combination. And that's where people talk about, you know, sort of hybrid cloud deployment, saying get the scale and elastic capabilities out of Azure, but still be able to own and control portions on net for myself, because this is the important data to me.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the revolution that happens. And understanding how to manage those platforms and design and architect them is far more valuable than being able to click the button day to day.
Yep.
And we're delegating that role. We're literally delegating that role to those business function units. We're saying, marketing team, you want a new website? Click the button.
Yeah. Right? Go ahead.
Sales team, you guys want a new website to run whatever, you know, fancy new, you know, promotion system that you're going to do? Click the button. You know, we don't want to hear about it. Just click the button, because you guys already have budget for all this stuff. And click the button, make it happen. Our service catalog goes out and deploys it. As long as you have a web app team that understands how to do, you know, stateless web tier, you're done, right? As long as they can deploy to an Azure service, or as long as they can deploy to our private cloud service, we don't even have to get involved in the process. The only thing that we need to know is notifications. And because we built and automated these systems, we should already have that in our system for monitoring and controls. And we can tell you when it goes down, we can tell you when it moves, we can tell you when we backed it up, we can tell you who changed it. But those are only values if something actually happens and you use them as a notice.
Yeah.
And, you know, your whole goal as a DevOps person is, I don't want to get email and I don't want anyone calling me, right?
It's true. But yeah, I also think I like the idea of getting to the point of not so much billing, but, you know, the power of the Azure invoice that shows this many compute cycles and this much data moved and this much data stored, being able to see in your own infrastructure that resolution of information. You can go assign a dollar figure to it later, but it starts with being able to measure really details of how your infrastructure is being used.
Yeah, it gives you a lot of insight, and suddenly, like, well, the app that really brings us in the most money, we're not giving the most resources. Maybe we should change that.
Right.
Maybe the app we're giving tons of resources to makes us the least amount of money. Maybe we should change that. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of insight. I think it was interesting. I was talking with Greg Shields at the Tech Mentor event, and he was saying, you know, we're going to be changing you know, how things are going to work for some of the demos. And the principal goal is that, you know, all demos are going to be done in Azure. And you're going to pre-build all your environment. Everything's going to be built up in Azure for doing your demo components, for everything, for everyone who's going to participate in the class, for the Tech Mentor conferences. And you'll be able to just statelessly reset them. You'll be able to, you know, go out and deploy whatever environment. And part of the goal is we're only paying for a small fraction of the cost when the event is actually happening to actually make those resources available. And the rest of the time, it's spun down. It doesn't do anything.
Right.
So it was pretty cool because it's quite clear that, you know, running full lab demo kits and hauling all this equipment all over the place just makes zero sense anymore. it's like, why do you do that? Why are you hauling all this equipment around to travel for a conference or to travel for training? And so obviously the next logical leap is, you know, having all these services hosted in the cloud and being able to provide some of this training and things, you know, over the web. There's a lot of value of seeing people in person. And so, it's sort of invaluable to see people who are really, really good at what they do and being able to interact and talk with them in a more direct fashion that a conference provides. But let me tell you, the training side and the lab side, doesn't matter where you're doing that. And I think that's
not a big deal at all.
No, it's not a big deal. And the funny thing is that the application development folks have known this for years. They're like, we don't really care where the stuff lives. Just give us an environment, and as long as we can get to it, we're good. It's been the IT pro folks that have held on for so long. I need my server environment in my data center, sitting in a building, in a room that I can walk up and get into. And you know, it's been a long time and a long time coming for them to change their mindset on that. Right, that I need to have a physical server that I own, right, that I manage, that I deal with. And the big utility compute folks have gotten away from all that mindset. But more importantly, their biggest hassle is dealing with all the stuff that no one ever wants to deal with. It's like, you know, how many mean time to failure for hard drives. If you're running a large cloud infrastructure, you know how many hard drives fail on you every day?
Yeah.
It's not something you ever want to deal with. You're just like, that's it. We have a different sort of support agreement in play for companies of that size, because all you do is just ship pallets of equipment out there because you know you're going to be replacing X amount of power supplies, X amount of hard drives, X amount of, you know, NIC interfaces, everything else, LAN on motherboards, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's just a normal part of the day. You've reached a certain scale now where that's just not meaningful. But I think the bigger thing here, even if it is meaningful in our private clouds, is that we've built our infrastructure in such a way that it's tolerant to it. It just shifts around.
It just moves around. And that should be really exciting to IT pro and DevOps folks, right?
Yeah.
Because in theory, that means that our lives should be getting better. The number of late night phone calls that actually matter should go down.
Well, and I'm no longer disassembling servers to repair things, or you know, that machine doesn't work anymore. It's the work's already off of it. Pull it and put something else in.
Right. Yeah, let someone else deal with that. All right. I don't want to deal with being a day-to-day person that has to scramble to go down to some data center, sit in a freezing cold environment, you know, with everyone staring over your shoulder about why this service isn't up and operational anymore. Right?
Yeah.
That's, you know, having the CTO and the CEO coming up and asking you every 15 minutes, do you have it operational again? Why anyone wants to live through that, I have no idea. That makes no sense.
Ideally, we're in a place now where hardware failures are routine and they're transparent to the user. It never happens.
Right. There's something interesting happening on the network side, which is fits with how people are viewing, you know, their operating system environment, is that I no longer worry about the hardware, the underlying hardware to make my OS function anymore and my application suite that sits on top of that OS function anymore. And networking is moving in a similar direction, saying, I can get the lowest commodity utility compute. I can get the lowest commodity utility network built. And as long as I'm building virtualization overlays, as long as my virtualization network is abstracted away from those hardware components in the same fashion that the OS is, I now have high availability network components that are moving around in the same fashion that my OS moves.
Right.
And that's what's really sort of exciting about saying, you know, I'm not building networks in the same way that I was before. And I now have elastic capabilities to do network overlays that are, you know, tenant specific, but high available at the same time. And I don't have to build the same sort of redundancy that I built in before on a network level for those utility compute environments.
Right.
And so this drives down the cost per port. It drives down the high availability features that I have to provide in the network. It drives down a lot of things that traditionally went into building a large scale, highly available network environment.
Absolutely.
And that's really important for, you know, very large infrastructure providers who are paying very high cost per port for 10 gig Ethernet, 40 gig Ethernet. Like, how can I drive that cost point for that model for that? That device import down as low as possible. And the server team's already doing this with, you know, 10 gig LAN on motherboard. And so it's, what can I do at the top of rack to reduce that cost in addition? I don't need high availability top of rack. If the whole rack disappears, I don't care anymore, right?
Yeah, doesn't matter.
If I lose power, I just move those resources someplace else. And so the same thing holds true with network fabric, because the network fabric's a virtualization overlay on top of my cloud environment in the same fashion that my OS is.
And that leads us to this whole open compute project as well, which I don't think we have time for today, but it certainly is impacting the way we think about data centers.
Yeah, I mean, and what's interesting is that data centers no longer measure themselves in uptime in the traditional fashion.
Yeah.
And probably the more important factor is their power utilization.
Yep.
So everything that they measure themselves is how much power does it take to operate versus how much power do I actually consume to provide resources.
Yeah. Now, and I love the idea that we might get to watts per transaction at some point, but we're not there yet.
Right. Yeah, and it's revolutionary what's happening in data centers. Very large data centers are being built by folks like, you know, Facebook and eBay and Yahoo and Google and folks like that. They're getting absolutely incredible ratios for things that they're doing with solar and things that they're doing with, you know, sort of container builds that can handle much higher exposure than building traditional data centers. So there, you know, there's really interesting blog posts available about some of the eBay containers that are actually sitting at their Arizona data center on top of the roof. So it's direct exposure in Phoenix, Arizona, right?
Yeah.
of their infrastructure, and they're pushing the envelope about what can be possible to do for running some of these data centers in really harsh environments and still get incredible ratios for power efficiency out of them.
It's awesome.
And so it makes no sense when you look at it from a cost model standpoint, from a business model standpoint anymore, that all these businesses are saying we have to build, you know, these huge MDF and data centers within our facilities. They can't come anywhere close to matching the power efficiency ratios that these large data centers are putting in play. And that's going to be the challenge for enterprises to really realize that, you know what? It doesn't make sense for us to own this amount of stuff anymore. Our job is to own intellectual property, not to own a large amount of physical assets for IT hardware that we have to flip on an ongoing basis over and over and over again.
Yeah, take care of the customer. Don't worry about the infrastructure. Other people can do that. Hey, Ed, always a riot to talk to you, sir. Another half hour flew by.
Yeah, it's always wonderful talking to you, and I really look forward to having you come down and do the Women in Tech panel. That's going to be exciting, and have you speak and present on DevOps stuff is going to be very cool too.
You bet. Thanks so much for coming on.
All right, I appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.